This is David Duke. And this is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Web Radio Broadcast, broadcasting to the entire world with news and information of vital importance to Europeans and people of European descent, wherever they may live upon the earth. And certainly, as I always say, it's very vital for all the people of the world. And you can see the reality of this book, Jewish Supremacism, that I'm quoting from, that I'm speaking in a spoken word version. You can see the reality in Lebanon every day. It is a slaughter in Lebanon. And one reason why this is going on is because we have such an incredible Jewish supremacy in media, not only in the United States, but it affects, of course, media all over the world. We're not getting the true story on international cable networks. We're not getting the true story in the newspapers. We're getting such a slant, even in papers that aren't controlled by Jewish supremacists and outlets that aren't controlled by them. They still have to go to other Jewish supremacist-owned and controlled media to get certain input. And so the slant continues every day, and the slaughter in Lebanon goes on. Today we'll take up Jewish media supremacy in part two, and we'll begin by my experiences in New Orleans. I hope that you enjoy this, and I'll see you in a few moments after the end of part two of chapter five, Jewish Media Supremacy of Jewish Supremacism. You know, I grew up reading the New Orleans Times-Picayune, and from third grade on, I would read it every morning with my father. By the time breakfast ended, Father had decorated it with toast crumbs and coffee stains, and I had garnished it with oatmeal and milk. My father would take the news section first, and I would take the sports and the comic pages, and then it would be my turn to get the headlines while he read the other parts of the paper. Up until the 1950s, the Times-Picayune was truly a Southern newspaper. It reflected the values, the standards, the political viewpoints, and the heritage of the South. We considered the paper our lifeblood of information about the simple goings-on around town and about the major events in the world at large. It was our paper. Not only because it was printed in our city, it represented something of our thinking, our culture, our values. When forced integration of schools began, the Times-Picayune railed against the federal intrusion into our way of life. Many articles talked about the amicable relationship between blacks and whites in New Orleans, about the excellent quality of life for whites and blacks, and how the city included one of the largest black entrepreneurial classes of any city in America. It wrote about how, under white direction, black educational and living standards had progressed over the last few decades, dramatically. The editorial writers of the Times-Picayune predicted dourly that forced integration and the stirring up of blacks by Yankees and liberal agitators would ruin one of the most beautiful and culturally rich and charming cities in the world. Integration, they maintained, would retard the progress of the black community, ultimately, and threaten white standards. After the purchase of the Times-Picayune by S.I. Newhouse, the paper gradually began to shift to the left. As the city schools and government services began to disintegrate under integration and the Times-Picayune became increasingly liberal, my father, who was mildly conservative, came to dislike it. I still enjoyed the paper. As I got older, I found myself agreeing with its racial viewpoints. I didn't know that the Picayune was no longer a Southern paper, and that its owner was a Jewish refugee of Tsarist Russia who resided not in New Orleans but the New York City area. When Newhouse died, he left a media colossus worth about $10 billion to his two sons, Samuel and Donald. Among their newspaper holdings were the Times-Picayune, the Syracuse New York Morning Post Standard, and the Afternoon Herald Journal, the Mobile Alabama Morning Register and Afternoon Press, the Huntsville Alabama Morning News and Afternoon Times, the Birmingham Alabama Morning Post Herald and Afternoon News, the Springfield, Massachusetts Morning Union and Afternoon News, and Sunday Only Republican. The Newhouse empire today owns 30 daily newspapers, 12 television stations, 87 cable TV systems, 24 national magazines, and the Parade Sunday supplement, that has a staggering circulation of more than 22 million. When Newhouse bought the Times-Picayune, it was reported by Time magazine that he commented, quote, "I just bought New Orleans." In some ways, his statement is accurate. Newhouse and his employees could say anything they liked about any person or any issue with little fear of contradiction. Newhouse, secure in his monopoly, was free to push whatever social and political agenda he wished. Even today, more than 25 years after Newhouse's purchase of the Times-Picayune, many in New Orleans are unaware that a Jewish New York family owns the paper. The editorial page gives a local address and says the publisher is Ashton Phelps, the descendant of the family who once owned the paper. A little deception there, I think. When I was a teenager, just learning of the Jewish control of the media, I noticed that many of the Picayune's advertisers were Jewish-owned businesses, including Gold Rings, Levitt's, Mintz, Godshaw's, a French-adapted Jewish name, Kirschman's, Rosenberg's, Rubenstein Brothers, Gus Meyer's, Adler's, and Maison Blanche. One of the biggest advertisers in New Orleans was Sears and Roebuck, and Edith Stern, a New Orleans activist in Jewish and far-left causes, was Sears' largest stockholder. I soon learned that many of the largest advertising agencies, both local and national, were under Jewish ownership and direction, and these agencies, in turn, could steer advertising to whatever newspaper or media outlet they so desired. Jewish advertising power not only has increased the Jewish monopolization and consolidation of American newspapers, it also greatly affects publications with Gentile management or ownership. All major publications are dependent on Jewish advertising revenue, so their features, reporting, and editorial policies must be carefully attuned to Jewish attitudes and interests. Ultimately, the free press is not free. It runs on money. The old axiom certainly holds true in the media: he who pays the piper calls the tune. At the beginning of this century, most major cities had two or three daily newspapers, and many had even more. There has been an alarming trend toward monopolization of daily newspapers. There are only about 50 cities in America with more than one daily newspaper, and many of those have the same parent company. The Newhouse-owned Times-Picayune and the Afternoon States Item aptly illustrate the trend. They merged into the Times-Picayune early and late editions. As a result of the 1,600 daily newspapers in America, only 25% are independently owned rather than part of a newspaper chain, and only a tiny number are large enough to have even a skeleton reporting staff based outside of their own communities. They are dependent on news-gathering conglomerates such as the New York Times, the Washington Post, and the Newhouse chain for their national and world news. And you'll see these bylines in almost every local newspaper across the United States. The Jewish domination of American media is longstanding. Even as far back as the 1920s, Jews had influence far disproportionate to their percentage of the population. And even though media operations frequently change hands, and the CEOs, chairman, administrators, and top editors change, Jewish domination is stronger than ever, and the power brokers continue to increase and consolidate their power. Much of the news that independent newspapers print comes from the wire services, the giant of which is the Associated Press. Michael Silverman is its current managing editor, who directs the day-to-day news reporting and supervises the editorial department of the AP. Silverman reports to Jonathan Woolman, another Jew, who is executive editor for the AP, and the other leading source of news articles for local papers are the three most influential newspapers in America. And they are the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and the Washington Post. They're positioned at the heart of American business, culture, and government. Their influence reaches out across the nation. They originate news focused on issues of their liking, elevate public figures they approve of, and denigrate those who they do not. They tell us what movies to see, what books and magazines to read, what records to buy, what art to admire. They influence how we think on a thousand different subjects, and in fact, they frequently choose what subjects that we are to think about by trumpeting some stories and ignoring others. The New York Times is read all over America, in academia, business, politics, the arts, and literary world. It sets our political, social, entertainment, literary, artistic, and fashion standards. The Sulzberger family also owns the New York Times Company, 33 other newspapers, including the Boston Globe, purchased in June 1993 for $1.1 billion, 12 magazines, including McCall's and Family Circle, with circulations of more than 5 million each, 7 radio and TV broadcasting stations, a cable TV station, and 3 book publishing companies. The New York Times News Service transmits news stories, features, and photographs from the New York Times by wire to 506 other newspapers, news agencies, and magazines. Like so many other newspapers, it began under Gentile ownership and ended up under Jewish control. George Jones and Henry Raymond founded the paper in 1851. Near the turn of the century, Jewish activist Adolf Ox bought the paper, and now his great-grandson, Arthur Ox Sulzberger Jr., is CEO and publisher. Executive and managing editors are Max Frankel and Joseph Leovold. Because it is so widely read by Washington's elected and appointed federal officials and bureaucrats, the Washington Post has a huge impact on our government. It can influence appointments, firings, legislation, and foreign and domestic affairs of all kinds. It can even be instrumental in bringing down a president, as it certainly was the major force in the demise of Richard Nixon. The bosses of the Washington Post can choose to give publicity to an issue or choose to ignore it, choose to be outraged about an event, or bellow in approval. The Post has numerous holdings in newspapers, television, and magazines, most notably Newsweek, the weekly news magazine that's very popular in America. The Washington Post Company has a number of other media holdings in newspapers, the Gazette newspapers, including 11 military publications, and television, and we can go on and on. Notably, the nation's number two weekly magazine, Newsweek. The Washington Post Company has various television ventures that reach a total of about 7 million homes, and its cable TV service, Cable One, has 635,000 subscribers. In a joint venture with the New York Times, the Post publishes the International Herald Tribune, the most widely distributed English language daily in the world. Like the New York Times, the Washington Post started out in Gentile hands. It was founded in 1877 by Stilson Hutchins and was later run by the McLean family. Due to the McLean's conservative policies, Jewish advertising shifted to other Washington papers, driving the Post into bankruptcy. A Jewish financier, Eugene Meyer, stepped in to buy it for a trifling sum at a bankruptcy auction. As soon as it passed into Jewish hands, advertising from Jewish businesses and advertising agencies returned, and the newspaper returned to profitability. This is the kind of team effort that Jewish extremists used to exert political, economic, and social control. In an effort to further consolidate the media of our nation's capital, the Jews ran an advertising boycott of Colonel Robert McCormick's Time Herald, which they detested because of its support for anti-communist Senator Joseph McCarthy, who was uncovering, by the way, so many Jewish communists. Unable to sell retail advertising space, the newspaper shrunk dramatically and began losing about $1 million a year and was finally sold to Mayer in 1954 at a bargain price. The Washington Post is now run by Mayer's daughter, Catherine Mayer Graham, the principal stockholder and chairman of the board. Her son, Donald, is president and CEO. The third leading influential newspaper in America, especially in the business realm, is the Wall Street Journal, published along with Barron's and 24 other daily newspapers by Dow Jones and Company. The Wall Street Journal has a circulation of more than 2 million, making it America's largest business daily and has a tremendous influence on business, banking, trade, and economic issues. The CEO of Dow Jones and chairman and publisher of the Wall Street Journal is none other than Peter R. Kahn, a Jew. Most of New York's other major newspapers are in no better hands than the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal. In January 1993, the New York Daily News was bought from the estate of the late Jewish media mogul Robert Maxwell, born Ludwig Hoch, by Jewish real estate developer Mortimer V. Zuckerman. The Village Voice is the personal property of Leonard Stern, the billionaire Jewish owner of the Hartz Mountain pet supply firm. The New York Post is owned by News Corporation under the Jew Peter Sharonin. Time, Newsweek, and U.S. News & World Report are the three major weekly news magazines published in the United States. The largest and most respected of these is Time, which has a circulation of more than 4 million. The CEO of Time Warner is Gerald Levin, a Jewish benefactor of many Jewish and Israeli causes. Newsweek is the second most widely read weekly with a circulation of more than 3 million. It is under the control of Washington Post's Catherine Mayer Graham, another avid supporter of numerous Jewish causes, and the third-ranking news magazine is U.S. News & World Report, whose owner, publisher, and editor-in-chief is Mortimer B. Zuckerman, a proud Zionist who owns the Atlantic Monthly and the New York Daily News. Book publishing is perhaps the part of American media least controlled by Jews, yet they still dominate the most important parts of that industry. All one needs is a printer and some cash to produce or publish a book. And tens of thousands of printers do business in America along with hundreds of small book publishers. Yet here too, the Jewish influence is powerful, for writing a book, no matter how informative and provocative, offers no guarantee of it being published. And being published offers no guarantee of it being professionally promoted, distributed, or even reviewed. The half dozen or so largest publishers and distributors handle 95% of the biggest selling books in America. And in those areas of book publishing and distribution, Jewish appraisal is inevitable, and Jewish approval is critical. According to Publishers Weekly, the three largest American publishers are Random House and its subsidiaries, including the Crown Publishing Group, Simon & Schuster, and Time Warner Trade Group, including Warner Books, Little Brown, and the Book of the Month Club. Jews control two out of three, and the third, Random House, has many Jews in important positions throughout its division of the conglomerate it has joined. Gerald Levin is CEO of Time Warner Communications, which owns Time Warner Trade Group. The other major media, Simon & Schuster, is a subsidiary of Viacom, Incorporated. Viacom CEO and chairman is Sumner Redstone, born Murray Rothstein. Additionally, it should be noted that the largest publisher of children's books with more than 50% of the market is Western Publishing, whose chairman and CEO is Richard Snyder, who just replaced another Jew, Richard Bernstein. One of the most brilliant books of the century dealing with the weakening of American majority is Dispossessed Majority by Wilmot Robertson. This book is rich in research and ideas, and it's written with a command of the English language rarely seen today, but Robertson was unable to find a major publisher because he dared to write about the unmentionable subjects of race and Jewish ethnocentrism. No national or major publications would review his work, and no national distributors would handle it. Many national publications would not even permit Robertson to buy advertisements for the book because it contained information unacceptable to the self-ordained Jewish censors. Despite its ban from the mainstream bookstores and not being reviewed by the major media critics, Robertson has sold well over 150,000 copies through the mail and by word of mouth, which, by the way, shows how the book would be a smash. As even a bestseller by normal standards, that would be a smash bestseller if it was actually promoted by media and reviewed in the national media. When I read the article by Edward Fields documenting the Jewish control of the three major television networks, I was fascinated. ABC, CBS, and NBC produced the overwhelming majority of entertainment television broadcasts in America, and for most Americans, they are the primary source of news. Leonard Goldenson of ABC, William Paley of CBS, and David Sarnoff of NBC ran their respective networks for decades, setting the tone and breadth of the modern Jewish domination of broadcasting. And next, in my book, I run a portion of Dr. William Pierce's Who Runs the Media, an article on the current state of American broadcasting, and I suggest you go to the book and to my chapter, which is online, to get that material. And by the way, please acknowledge that this book is a slice of time. I can't continually put all the latest people who control the media, but certainly from this book you'll see a pattern. And I often update media powers in my website, www.davidduke.com, so that's available for you. So I'm going to skip that part and let you certainly find it on my media website. And also you can contact and read the paper by Dr. Pierce for yourself. The overwhelming Jewish control that Dr. Pierce writes about in television and movies is not a new phenomenon. It is not a short-term aberration in the entertainment and news industry. It's been prevalent for decades. Now, over time, the names may change. but the heritage usually remains the same. If anything, the Jewish power in American media continues to consolidate and grow. Jewish publications themselves often boast about their power, even to their own readers. Now, Jewish supremacy over the mass media is not limited to the United States of America. In Russia, Jewish crime boss Boris Berezovsky and Vladimir Gusinsky have had the two largest media empires. Gusinsky, who's now in Spain trying to avoid Russian criminal prosecution, also happens to be the head of the Jewish Congress in Russia. Berezovsky retains control over his media empire in the Russian Federation, even though he's also under self-imposed exile to avoid criminal arrest. In Britain, the largest TV conglomerates are also under direct Jewish ownership and control. They include the ITV network, which is owned by Michael Green and his Carlton Communications Company, Granada PLC, which is under Steve Morrison, and Anglia Television under Graham Creelman. The other major player in British media is, of course, Robert Murdoch, who, if he's indeed a Gentile, has been described as being more pro-Israel than many of the most radical Zionist partisans. Even the BBC, which supposedly is owned by the British people, has many Jewish supremacists in important positions. Alan Yentop, for instance, is head of BBC programming. Even BBC Radio, which is the most listened to radio programming in the world, is headed by Jenny Abramsky, an unabashed Jewish partisan. The Canadian mass media yet offers another example of Jewish media supremacy. With the sale of the last major Gentile conglomerate, Conrad Black's Southam Publications, one Jew, Israel Izzy Asper, now has a majority of Canada's major media under his direct control. Asper's company, called Can West, now owns more than 60% of all of Canada's newspapers and other media outlets. It owns 128 local newspapers and 14 major metropolitan dailies, including the Vancouver Sun, Vancouver Province, Calgary Herald, Montreal Gazette, and the National Post, a nationwide publication. The courage of one investigative reporter, Bill Marsden, in the Montreal Gazette exposed Asper's suppression of stories that were critical of Israel. Marsden, at great risk to his career, went public with Asper's directive that gave him direct control over the new national editorials that would appear in all the newspapers. The directive stated that no local editors would be allowed to have a differing editorial position on issues such as Asper's support for Israel. Furthermore, Asper made it clear he wanted to see nothing in his newspapers in any way critical of Israel. On the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation As It Happens program, Marsden said, quote, on issues such as on the Middle East, they don't want to see criticism of Israel. And that, quote, we do not run our newspaper op-ed pieces that express criticism of Israel and what it's doing in the Middle East, unquote. Later in the broadcast, the host asked Asper's national editorial writer, Murdoch Davis, if any of Can West's newspapers could print anything about Israel that Asper did not like. He replied, no, it is clearly the intent that the newspapers will speak with one voice on certain issues of overarching national or international importance. Of course, and that one voice has a distinctively Jewish tone. The one thing of overarching national and international importance is not to write anything even remotely critical of Israel. Such a policy, of course, is not in the interest of truth or the most basic principles of journalism. Such is not in the interest of the Canadian people, who should have a right to know the whole truth and not simply the Jewish supremacist propaganda emitted by Can West. Such is not in the interest of a truly free press. But such media control and deception is in the interest of Jewish supremacism. For only through lies and deception can its evil survive. Even though Asper's directive became public, he has no intention of rescinding it. In fact, his son David has even sarcastically urged the protesting reporters, who are protected somewhat by union agreements, to resign. One can imagine the many directives issued by other Jewish firms that never have been publicly revealed. Of course, such directives, not to write anything critical of Israel, is overkill. for every journalist quickly understands what his Jewish bosses want in regard to Jewish issues. How many journalists would knowingly sacrifice their jobs, their career, or any future advancement for daring to defy their Jewish supremacist bosses on even the smallest point? And what if the journalists dared to stand up and really expose the world's oldest, most ruthless, and virulent racial supremacism? Not only would he lose his career, he would probably face universal scorn and derision. Indeed, Jewish supremacists might even compare him to David Duke. God forbid. Well, I hope you're finding very interesting and informative this chapter on Jewish media supremacy. Part 2, I think, has made a big impact, and I think that you're going to find Part 3 to be very interesting and fascinating as well. I look forward to being with you again tomorrow and sharing that with you. And please remember that your support and your contributions and your work to spread these ideas throughout the Internet and throughout the world really will make the difference in whether we succeed or whether we fail. And I don't want to think about failure, because if we fail, we lose all. Our freedoms, our heritage, even our very existence. We are coming to critical times in the entire history of our European people, in fact, history of the world. This is dramatic and important for all people of the world, and I hope that you do your part in getting out this material. Thanks so much. I look forward to being with you again tomorrow for Part 3 of Jewish Media Supremacy, Chapter 5 of my book, Jewish Supremacism. This has been a David Duke Worldwide Web Radio broadcast. For more information and to support our vital work, please visit www.daviddukedave.com.